The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome to IMC. My name is Gil Fronsdal, and I'm going to be the teacher for this five weeks, right? Some years it's five and some years it's six, so I think it's 5 weeks. Course on mindfulness meditation, and it's one of the favorite things I do here at IMC, to teach this intro class. I've been doing it for many years, and happy to have you here. As people are still coming in, so I'll say a little bit about myself, since that's the least important part. So I've been involved in Buddhist practice pretty much my whole adult life. And I started meditating when I was 19, and spent years practicing and living in monasteries here in this country and in Japan and Southeast Asia and Burma and Thailand. I first started doing training in Zen, doing Zen practice, and was involved with the San Francisco Zen Center, where I was ordained as a Zen monk or a Zen priest, and then spent a year in Japan practicing in monasteries in Japan. And then I spent about a year and a half in Thailand and Burma and practicing in the tradition that we teach in here. Some people think that we're kind of a Zen center because I have the Zen background. But in fact, the tradition that I was trained in to teach and practiced here is called Theravada Buddhism. It's the Buddhism of Southeast Asia. And it's a particular form of meditation practice called, the Buddhist word is Vipassana. And it sounds pretty esoteric. If you like to be involved in esoteric things, you can call it Vipassana. Or if you want to call it something ordinary, you can. It basically means to see clearly. We practice seeing clearly. So it's a pretty ordinary thing, I hope. Or we hope it becomes ordinary, that everyone sees clearly. And so I trained in this practice in Southeast Asia. I came back from Asia and continued practicing it here. And then in 1989 or something, 89, I started a teacher training with Jack Kornfield. In 1990, I came to this area by doing a doctoral program at Stanford. And what else was there for me to do but Buddhist studies? And so I did that there. And when I came in 1990 to start school at Stanford, there was a meditation group that met Monday nights in Palo Alto. And they asked if I would take it over, if I'd be the teacher for the group. And that group slowly grew over time. And as it kept growing, it became incorporated. And then in 2001, we bought this building here to be our home for our meditation community. So we've been here now for 11 years, I guess, 10 years. And been a good place, good home for us. We have a very nice community. So I welcome you here. And clearly this practice comes out of Buddhism. This is a Buddhist center. But in case that idea has frightened some of you, I want to reassure you that we hold the Buddhism here very lightly. And we feel that this intro class especially, that the practice of mindfulness is such an effective practice, it's such a universal human capacity that we offer it freely without you needing to have any reference to Buddhism if you don't like. You can take what you value, what's useful for you from this, and leave behind what you think is not useful. The practice of meditation practice we do here is using a variety of very common human capacities. So common that if I'd only listened to my mother when I was a child, I probably wouldn't have needed this, because she would regularly tell me, "Gil, pay attention." And she had to say it a lot, so I don't know what I was doing, but it's the idea of paying attention. Paying careful attention is one of the key aspects of this, and the premise is that most people don't pay very careful attention to what their life is about in the moment. Most people spend a lot of time in their head, thinking or visualizing, often about the future, planning the future, or remembering the past, or just fantasizing in general. And if we do think about the present moment, we're in the present, our thinking is not that clear. Often there's a lot of projections, a lot of ideas, bias, preferences that go into, embedded in the way we experience our life. And so we don't really see clearly because we see through the filter of our emotions, our beliefs, our preferences, and all that. And so the idea of developing a clear seeing is the ability to see how all this works by strengthening our capacity to see, to pay attention. We're also utilizing our capacity to get focused and to be more concentrated. And this is something, also a human capacity we all have. And most people don't develop that capacity to a great extent. Some people develop in particular work, particular activities, sports or crafts or music or something, where you develop your concentration, your ability to focus. It's a really helpful capacity to develop. Life goes a lot easier if you can stay focused, if your mind is not scattered and jumping around a lot. We have a lifestyle now for many people that the lifestyle itself of all the technology we have tends to create a scattered mind. There's something peculiar about spending a lot of time on a screen where there certainly is a certain kind of concentration that kind of breaks up the mind or fragments it or scatters it or gets it spinning. So it's not settled. It's not a peaceful kind of focus and concentration. So one of the things we're developing is meditation, is capacity to focus. The third thing we're cultivating and developing is our capacity to stay calm or be calm or find calm. Or what's become popular these days is to talk about mindfulness meditation, the practice I'm going to teach you, as a way of lessening stress. Probably the most popular way that this practice has come into American society is in what's called mindfulness-based stress management. And this is maybe some of you have come from programs like that. They teach them at Stanford and Redwoods and Kaiser's and El Camino Hospital. Many of the hospitals, local hospitals, have 8-week courses on this mindfulness-based stress reduction. The part of the virtue of that is that those programs is that there's no reference to Buddhism. You can go to El Camino or Stanford Hospital and never know that you're learning a practice that came out of Buddhism. And I like that. You know, it's not that it's covert Buddhism, but rather that it's just a great thing, you know, a capacity that's good for everyone to develop. So I'll introduce you to this over these weeks. And the way that it's taught is sequentially, so it builds one week after the other. When I went to Burma to practice this practice there, I showed up at the monastery, and they gave me a cassette tape. And they said, listen to this. And I sat down with the cassette tape, and it was maybe half an hour or so recording that gave the full instruction. Just you sit down and pay attention. And what we've learned, what we've developed here in the West is not to do it that way, not to kind of give people the full set of instructions all at once, because it tends to confuse people, or it tends not to be as effective as a way of getting people to understand how to apply this practice of mindfulness to different parts of their lives. And so what we do is we break it up and kind of build over the weeks. And so the first day today will be an introduction to it, discussion about how meditation posture is a very useful part of meditation, and then mindfulness and breathing. The posture, the body, and breathing is kind of the foundation. Then next week we'll talk about mindfulness of the body. Being embodied, being connected to your body is a hugely important part of this practice. And even though the word is mindfulness, as if you're supposed to fill your mind, it's probably almost as accurate to say it's a bodyfulness, to the degree to which we're learning to live in our body. And in doing that, connecting to the tremendous wisdom and reference point the body can provide for our life. It's very useful to be connected. The third week will be mindfulness of emotions. And for some people, that's a huge part of their lives. For other people, we wish it was a bigger part of their lives. And it's a very important part of human life. And to be connected to it and be wise about it, to know how to be present for emotions and not be swept away by them, confused by them, caught by them, caught up in the kind of spirals of trying to repress them or deny them or ignore them, is a very useful thing. And so the third week will be about how to bring mindfulness to emotions. The fourth week will be mindfulness of thinking. It's not uncommon for people to meditate to have an adversarial relationship to their thinking. Because generally, it's a good reason, because they're trying to stay focused and be present, and the thing that for many people makes it most difficult is their mind keeps taking them away into some thought that they're having. And so there seems like a struggle between the two. So by the time we get to the fourth week, you'll have enough of a foundation of what we're doing here that you'll understand how not to have thoughts as being a problem, but rather something to be incorporated into meditation in a useful way. And in doing that, the world of thinking will become a richer, more important world for you as you begin understanding some of the different dimensions of thinking that become clear as you bring mindfulness to it. The fifth week, last week of this series, will be the big part of it will be focusing on how to take this basic idea of mindfulness that you've learned in meditation practice and how to apply it to the rest of life outside of meditation. It's rather arbitrary to divide up your life between meditation and non-meditation. And in fact, I much prefer not to have a sharp line, because it's the same mind. You know, it's your mind, whether it's in meditation or not. And so to develop some of the capacities of paying attention, of being focused, of being relaxed in your daily life is a very helpful way to develop a wise life, live wisely. So the last week we'll talk about the application into life. So a couple of other things to say as an introduction. I should have said it earlier. We have hearing assistant devices. So I don't know if you can hear me say that. But we have these boxes by the counter there that if you have trouble hearing, and sometimes when I have really important things to say, my voice gets really low. So, you know, you help yourself. Xin Kwan, who's standing there, she's the manager today. And behind her, there's these hearing system devices that you, kind of wireless things that you could use if you'd like. The other thing is that these talks are recorded, and right? Mm-hmm. So they're recorded, and previous ones are recorded. So if you miss a class and you want to hear what you missed, you could listen to the recording, which is on our website. We have a website called audiodharma.org, and that has all the recordings from here at our center. So you can listen to what you miss, or if you want to listen, you know, be ahead of it. Some people like to prepare, right, for class. So you can listen to last year's class. And so it's a great resource, our website. Everything here offered here at our center is offered freely. We put a great value on the practice of generosity and gratitude and goodwill. And so much so that we find that it's actually better for people to develop meditation practice and spiritual life in that field of generosity, gratitude, and goodwill. And so everything here is done freely. And so that's how it's offered. If you'd like, you can make a donation to support the center or support the teacher. For this case, it would be me, whoever's teaching. How it works here is that there's a box by the door, and that box has two slots, and one is called operations. That helps us run the center, and the building and all the things we do. And the other slot says teacher, and whoever's teaching the particular event, that's their kind of donation for them. And for me, this is my full-time, life to be teaching here at IMC. So that's where my livelihood comes from. So it makes me very happy to be in this kind of system. And you can, please come and receive the gift that's offered. And we'll take it from there. So before we start, then kind of jump in, any questions about any of that you'd like to ask? Anything that would help you feel more connected to what we're going to do? Seems good? Okay. So let's try it. We'll do a short meditation. I'll guide you for about 10 minutes. To get you kind of just beginning into the territory. So take a posture, assume a posture. that is feels like it's going to be comfortable for 10 minutes. And later I'll talk more about posture, but just to get started now, just take a posture that's it's comfortable for you. And then gently close your eyes. And as you begin a meditation session, it's helpful to kind of get yourself settled into it, focused. There's a number of ways to settle in and get focused on what you're going to do. One way is to take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Kind of filling your torso with your breath as you breathe in. And then as you exhale, to relax your body, your shoulders, your chest. And then let your breathing return to normal. And in whatever way that's easy, become aware of your body. And notice what's happening in your body. And the approach of mindfulness meditation is to be non-judgmental as much as you can. Whatever you notice, it's all okay. So to feel your body, kind of roam around your body with your attention. And if there's any place in your body that you can easily relax, it's good to soften, relax. Some people are able to soften their face, around their eyes. Some people can soften their shoulders. Even if they don't relax, maybe you can just soften around them, the shoulder blades. It might be possible to soften the belly. And if possible, maybe the arms and the legs can relax a little bit. Some people find it's the idea of making them heavy is relaxing, feeling their weight. Now, it's helpful to be told right at the beginning of learning meditation that thinking that it's judging your meditation good or bad or right or wrong is not helpful. What's helpful is just to notice how you are, very simply, without judgment. And part of the reason meditation can be relaxing for people is because of its non-judgmental nature. It's one of the areas in life where you can just be as you are and relax about that. Even if your mind doesn't want to stay present. And very gently breathe a little bit deeper than you normally would. Just deep enough so you can become a little bit more familiar with what it feels like to be breathing. What parts of your body move as you breathe? What sensations are in your body as you breathe? Maybe in the chest moving or the belly moving. Some people feel the air going in and out through the nostrils. And then having become familiar with what it feels like to breathe, let your breathing get quieter and more normal again. But stay in touch with the experience of breathing. It's pretty normal to have the mind wander off in thought. And when it simple practice is whenever you notice that's happening, see if you can let go of what you're thinking about and come back to the experience of breathing. And if you can hang out there with that experience of breathing, hang in there, hang out. So what occupies your attention, your mind, is a simple experience of breathing. So then for the last minute of this short meditation, one of the things we're trying to cultivate here is a non-judgmental noticing, to notice what's happening with us without being for or against it, or judging it, or good or bad, or right or wrong, or judging it shouldn't be happening or should be happening. Just very simple, open-handed noticing of how it is. So in the last little bit, few minutes, few seconds here, see if you can just notice something about how you are. See if the noticing can be non-judgmental, easy. Just notice. And then to end the meditation, it can be helpful to take a couple of deep breaths, feel your body more fully. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Characteristics of this practice of mindfulness is that it's supposed to be simple. Simpler the better. I had a teacher who said, if it's not simple, it's not mindfulness. And then when I had all my traveler's checks stolen, he said, Gil, it's important to be simple, but not a simpleton. Simple. So hopefully that was a little bit of a simple introduction to begin this. I will build on this over time, but it's supposed to stay simple the whole time. So hopefully the building of it won't make it seem complicated. Sometimes it's can be deceiving when something is really simple because it might seem like it has no value if it's that simple. Just pay attention. My mother said that, right? But in fact, when it's cultivated and developed well, the capacity to pay attention with focus and relaxation, the impact it can have on our lives is quite dramatic. It can certainly bring a much more balanced life. It can bring a lot more wisdom to our life. Our capacity to be wise increases. Our capacity to be compassionate and caring increases. Our capacity to be creative increases as well. Our capacity to track and be wise and with our emotions and our thoughts increases. And in the Buddhist tradition, this practice, a simple practice, cultivates a lot of the really important spiritual qualities that Buddhism values. It cultivates generosity and kindness and patience and wisdom and equanimity, the energy, resolve, determination. Just a whole, it goes on, the list goes on. Kind of follows in the wake of doing the simple thing. And ultimately in Buddhism, this is the practice. A simple practice of paying attention is the practice in Buddhism that said it leads to liberation, to full enlightenment. So even though it will seem like a very simple thing, perhaps, it has great potential for us. Perhaps it would be nice to hear from a few of you what that was like to sit there for those 10 minutes. And it might be nice to hear a little bit of report or what it was like, and that would help me in turn knowing how to continue with teaching, with knowing what's maybe useful to. Yeah, and if you could use the mic, then everyone can hear, and if you don't mind.
Okay, the pressure's on now. Okay, so I basically couldn't pay much attention to my breath because I was like, this part of my neck is aching, and uh-huh. I've been sitting for too long, and I really should be answering that email from my advisor. it was a long struggle to stop thinking about how my neck is, uh-huh. and well, it didn't work, but yes, I guess I tried to move my neck around.
So okay,
things
good.
Worked, but
great.
Looked better.
So then the last minute where I asked you to notice what was going on in a non-judgmental, easy
yeah,
way,
yeah.
What happened for you then?
I didn't quite know what you meant by notice non-judgmentally how you are.
Uh-huh.
How you are sounded a little too profound.
Oh, too fake. Oh, just what I meant
yeah.
was, yeah, maybe it wasn't so clear, but what I meant was that yeah. You, in your case, to notice the pain in your neck.
I did, yeah.
In a non-judgmental, non-reactive way. Just there it is, just floating around. And
yeah. I did notice that, yeah. Mm.
Was it a little bit easier then?
It had gotten a lot easier by then. Because,
yeah, so. Okay, got easier yeah. in the 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And maybe because you were relaxing or?
Possibly.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Nice. Thank you.
I found it really hard to sit still.
Yeah.
I wanted to move the whole time. It was sort of like, you know, feeling a little bit like being in jail.
I can understand that. So one of the things that happens in meditation is we sit down to notice what goes on, and we find out very quickly that what's going on sometimes is there's a tornado in there. There's a lot of energy, there's a lot of pressure, there's a lot of thoughts, there's a lot of feelings, there's a lot of body sensations. A lot goes on that often we don't notice. And so one of the things that happens, we sit down to meditate, we start noticing some of the things going on. And what you just described is one of those things that can be noticed. And what it means is that if you can't sit down and be quiet and feel compelled to move and do this and that, you're not really free. The jailer is you. Is that energy inside of you that's, you know, telling you what to do? It might feel like you're limited, but with time, what you'll find is an ability to come to terms with all this, so that when you sit down, you feel like not in jail, but you feel like you're at home. But you have to contend and work with this. This is important to see it. It's the beginning to see how this actually is. So nothing's wrong with what happened to you. It's just the beginning of a process. Over here, behind Diana.
I've had some lung problems in the past.
You had what?
Is it not?
Yeah.
I've had some lung problems before,
yes.
And thinking about my breathing so much made me very nervous, and I found
yes.
over a few minutes I was sort of in a state of panic because I kept thinking about my lungs.
Great. That's great you bring this up right away. So it's pretty common in many circles, like Buddhist circles, to use the breath as the primary foundation for meditation. And it works for many, many people. But it's recognized it doesn't work for everybody. And there's a variety of reasons it doesn't work for some people. And there's nothing wrong with it not working. So if someone has trouble with breathing, and sometimes people have had asthma, or I've known people who drowned or almost drowned, and they had some kind of trauma around breathing or something, that the breath is just too difficult place to go. And so it's fine not to use the breath as the foundation. There's a number of other things that can be used. One of the most common ones that are offered is sounds. And sounds, so the mind goes off in thought, you come back, and rather than coming back to the breath, you come back to just listening to the sounds around you, the traffic and whatever sounds. And sounds, for many people, are more neutral. And with the breath, you know, some people get tied up with breathing and how they're supposed to breathe, whatever. And so just do sounds. So you might try that. Every time you hear me say to people, feel your breath, you interpret it for yourself. Listen to sounds. Makes And we can talk more about that as we go along. Okay. So, thank you for those who spoke up. And so that's the beginning. So one of the foundations for good meditation practice is having a good posture. And there's a number of benefits to focusing on posture. One is that to focus on your posture is to begin to be mindful, because you're just paying attention to something and giving care to something. Also, having a good aligned upright posture makes it easier to breathe, with the breath of the chest is a little more open. It's easier to relax when you're sitting upright in an aligned posture. Oddly enough, if you slouch in your couch in what you think is the most relaxed possible posture, your body can't actually relax as deeply as it has a capacity to relax. Many years ago, I read a study that said that the two postures that allows people to relax most deeply is lying down flat on your back and sitting cross-legged on the floor like I'm sitting now. There's something about this kind of posture that allows something to unwind and settle. So the same thing with a chair, by being a little bit careful with how you sit in a chair, you get some of the benefits of that. And also by paying attention to your posture and giving some care to it, then you might be able to sit longer and don't have to contend with some of the discomforts that can arise if you're not sitting well. And it's unfortunate to kind of sit in a kind of awkward way and then have your legs or your back hurt when it could easily have been avoided if you sat up in a straight way. So I like to put a lot of emphasis on this posture thing. I find it really, really helpful in the long term to work on it. And so much so that for people who are not used to sitting in a good meditation posture and want to develop that capacity, I recommend that they start practicing in other areas of their life, like watching television. You know, take the posture and start practicing this way rather than, you know, the couch or something. Start to kind of opening up and stretching the ligaments and tendons that are needed. So in meditation posture, the classic idea is to sit on the floor, cross-legged. It's not necessary to do this. I'll talk about it some, but it's fine to sit in chairs. The Buddhist lore is that the next Buddha that's coming will meditate in a chair. So maybe it's you. But I'll talk about both. So part of the advantage of sitting on the floor is that cross-legged is that you form a tripod with your knees and your butt, and a tripod is relatively stable. And so you have this broad base of stability, which makes it easier to hold you upright, feel supported, and thereby lets you easier to relax or let go in some nice way. There's a number of ways of sitting cross-legged. Usually it's good for people to sit up on a cushion. I think all of you are on a cushion. And if you're elevated, it's easier to get your knees down so the knees are on the ground. It's also, if you're elevated, it's easier to have a little curve in your lower back. You want to accentuate ever so slightly the natural curve down there. You don't want to be flat in your lower back, and you don't want to be overarched, but you want to have a little extra curve there because it gives a little strength to hold the rest of you up. And so that you usually get this by sitting up on a cushion. How high the cushion is depends on how open your hips are. So the more open the hips are, usually the lower people like to sit. And the less open you are, the higher it's useful to sit. If you can't get your knees down, you know, you have knees up like this, that's fine. But then you can get another cushion and put underneath it, you know, a blanket or something, and put underneath to support it so that you're not dangling in the air. The way that I recommend people sit and the way I actually usually sit, it wasn't for some reason just now, bad example for what I'm going to teach today, is not cross-legged at all, but to have one leg in front of the other. It's called, some people call it Taylor fashion, and some people call it Burmese fashion, to sit this way. And so that way, nothing is crossed, and you have the least amount of torque for sitting on the floor this way, least amount of torque on your knees and your ankles. And so most people find this a lot easier to sit. It's also more symmetrical, so your body is not being tipped to one side or the other as it would if it was sitting half lotus. You can sit half lotus with one foot up on the other thigh, and some people like to have the feeling, some kind of feeling of being contained or held, the lotus posture, or there's some kind of yogic benefits that come from this. Or you can sit in full lotus, you know, have both legs up, both feet up on the opposite thigh. But very few people can do that for very long. One of the great advantages is, yogically, it helps. I used to sit this way when I got sleepy in meditation, because you get the nice energy from it. But I very seldom do it, partly because I don't want to rely on that energy in order to stay awake. I want to be able to cultivate my inner capacity, not this physical thing. But it's a great thing to do if you have kids, because you can do all kinds of, you can go with the kids and lift yourself up and swing, and kids like it. So it seems that that's, but anyway, so the Burmese is good. You can make all kinds of adjustments to make yourself more comfortable. You can bring your knees further apart, some people like. Some people have the knees really close. You can bring your heels in close to your groin. You can bring your legs out further. All kinds of, you know, just until you find the right kind of thing that works for you. And then, as I said, support underneath here. I like to sit on buckwheat cushions. This one here is made out of buckwheat. There's something very nice about how the pressure and the works with the buckwheat. It spreads it out nicely. More traditionally, people have what's a kind of a cotton kind of thing called kapok. Some people like to kind of sit back fully on it and get really wide support. Some people like to sit more on the edge of it. And just I like this buckwheat because I bunch it up sometimes. So most of my weight is on my tailbone, which I find very nice for me. For a while, I used to sit on what's called a half moon cushion. We have lots of them. Anybody sitting on a half moon cushion? You know, lift it up so people can see. So like that. That's some people find it very nice because it spreads the weight kind of broadly and wide around down the back of your thighs, and that feels good. So different ways of sitting. You can also sit on a bench here. And what you do on a bench is you don't have a tripod exactly, but you have the low center of gravity, which is nice. And so you sit down on your knees like this. Some people find that this works very nice to sit this way. The other thing, you can also take one of these round cushions and put it upright like this and put it between your ankles. And so that also works well if you can't sit cross-legged. And also, you know, if you want to alternate, you know, if it gets uncomfortable sitting cross-legged, then you can sit this way, and that can be nice for a while. If you're sitting on a chair, the idea is not to cross your legs there, but to have your legs, the classic instructions to have your legs parallel to each other, going straight out and down at more or less 90 degrees, but with your hips slightly higher than your knees, certainly not lower than your knees. So if you really have long legs, then you want to build up some height so that your knees aren't higher than your hips. So both feet are flat on the soles of the feet are flat on the floor. Some people find they prefer having it out to the sides at a wide angle. It gives them a wider sense of support or a base that they like. If you're sitting in a chair, it's often recommended that you don't use the backrest if you don't have to, because there's a psychological value to being physically self-reliant. If you're leaning against something, then you're not self-reliant. Something's holding you up. And if you're physically holding yourself up, it's actually the inner self-reliance that we're trying to develop with this practice is a little bit easier to develop. Having said that, the advantage is pretty slight. And if you need to use the backrest because you have back issues or something, please, by all means, use it. The lower the support for the back, the strong support lower down is often better. Now, either sitting on the floor or sitting on your cushion, on the chair, you can take your hands on either side of your hips, either on the ground or on the side of the chair, and lift yourself almost off so that your chest kind of comes up a little bit. And then as you let go of your arms, let your shoulders kind of roll back a little bit. And if you do that, you probably find you're sitting a little bit straighter than you would otherwise. Your shoulders are probably a little bit rolled back and your chest is maybe a little more open. Then, and then with your hands, you put your hands anywhere, they're symmetrical. So they're doing the same thing. So the classic posture is to have them together, one hand on top of the other. So just, it can be on top of your ankle or your heel, any kind of way that feels comfortable. I mostly these days will sit with both hands on my thighs and near my knees, usually with the palms down. Some people like having palms up. So whatever's comfortable for you, they're more or less symmetrical. You want to, going up your spine, so the spine is kind of straight, coming up to the vertebrae in the back of your neck, see if you can keep it straight and create a little bit of space between the last vertebrae of your spine and your skull. So open it up a little bit. So it tends to tip the chin down a little bit. Some people will stick their chin up a lot, but the idea is to have a chin down a little bit by opening up that space, if you can. And we want to have the head squarely on the shoulders. You might ask, well, where else should it be? Some people hang their head forward quite a bit. Some people, their head falls down. Some people turn their head to one side or tip it to one side. And the idea is to have it squarely on the top of the shoulders. In the long term, it's a lot easier because once the head is a really heavy part of the body, and if it's not centered, the muscles of the neck and the upper back have to work hard to hold it up. And you might not notice it in ordinary life because you're going around moving a lot. But once you sit still and you have your head far ahead or you're leaning forward a lot, these muscles start to work a lot. So getting it all aligned as along a center of gravity makes it easier. In this tradition, we usually close our eyes. You don't have to close your eyes when you meditate. I've spent years and years meditating with my eyes open, but half open, focused to the ground. But in this particular tradition, the usual instruction is, if it's okay with you, is to close your eyes. And those are the basic points of the posture. Some people have other postural habits. If you spend a lot of time on the computer, or a lot of time slumped over, or a lot of time tense in some way, then an aligned, upright posture can be challenging because it goes against the usual habits. Some muscles are too tight, and some muscles are too weak from how we've been holding ourselves. And so it might take a while for the adjustment to happen, where the muscles need to become stronger, get stronger, and the muscles need to relax. So for people who are new to meditation, taking this posture can be, take a while before you kind of settle into it. It's really a worthwhile thing to do. In the long term, your meditations will be much more supported by having a good posture than by having a sloppy posture, I saw you were lying down. So some people can do lying down meditation. We usually don't recommend it because it's so easy to fall asleep, but it's considered to be one of the four dignified postures for meditation. The four postures are sitting, lying down, standing, people do standing meditation, and then walking meditation. And so if you need to lie down because you have a back issue or health issue, by all means, feel comfortable to do that here. Be very careful you don't fall asleep. My co-teacher here at IMC, her name is Andrea Fella. She has had sciatic problems, so she spent a lot of time doing her meditation lying down. And what she's learned to do is when she's lying, on the floor, she has her hands, one hand, at a right angle to her body, pointing straight up to the ceiling. And if she starts falling asleep, that hand begins to fall. And that tells her she has to kind of pay more attention. So if that's interesting for you. So any questions about that, about posture? Yes, please. And if you could use the mic, because both so I can hear and so other people can hear. She'll come with it.
I was just curious, when you're lying down, you lie on your back?
I think most people that I know, everybody I know who does just lying down meditation does it lying on their back. And some people have their legs out straight, mm-hmm. and some people have their legs, folded up, like a mountain or something. And you see statues of the Buddha lying down, and that's because of those statues he's dying. And I don't know, maybe it's also the posture he slept in, they say. He would always sleep on his right side. And but those statues are supposed to be his depicting his peaceful passing away. Yes, over here in the back.
What does it mean if your legs fall asleep as you're sitting there?
Good question. Thank you. I should have said something about that. So it's fairly common for people who are new to meditation for their legs to fall asleep. And generally it's because the blood is being blood circulation is being cut in some way. If the blood circulation is being cut, it's not really dangerous, except if you get up, stand up quickly. So you want to make sure you get your sensation back before you stand. Sometimes, very occasionally, the reason why legs go asleep is because of a nerve being pinched. And then that you never want to do again. You never want to pinch a nerve. It's that can create lasting damage. And the way you know the difference is that the blood circulation issues, the sensations, the blood will come back pretty quickly within a minute or two if you tap your feet and massage. If it's a nerve, it'll take longer. It'll take 4 or 5 minutes or more for the sensation to come back. So if you have that difference, if it takes 4 or 5 minutes for the sensation to come back, then you want to come and talk to me or someone who knows. You want to figure out another way of sitting. You never want to sit that way again because you don't want to make that worse. For beginners, it often is just a matter of waiting. For people who are new to this posture, new to meditation, usually within a few weeks, things sort themselves out. It's not a problem anymore. But if you're concerned, sometimes small adjustments in the posture can make a difference. Sitting a little bit differently on the chair, on the cushion, getting a little bit different support, a little bit different position for the knees. So the idea is to experiment until you find something. Yes? There was a woman, 10 years ago or so, who, so you know that meditation can be dangerous, she broke her leg, or broke a bone in her foot. Because she stood up when the foot was still asleep, and then she fell. So it's good to wait until you.
So, under the cushion, should
yes.
it be like a relatively hard surface, or can there be like because I sometimes like just sit cross-legged on a futon mattress.
Uh-huh. That's fine. I think you do whatever seems to work for you, that's comfortable and works for a long time. There's no particular desirable thing. I know some people who prefer to have a really firm, hard foundation, and some people like to have it soft, and they can, that way they can sit longer. They don't want to have to feel the pressure. Here, I'm sitting on two of these, right? But the reason I'm on two is because it's supposed to get me slightly higher so people there can see me. It also depends how long you sit. You know, if you sit for 20 minutes, you can probably manage in a lot of surfaces. But if you sit for an hour, even a soft thing can feel like cement after a while. So then you want to sit on something softer. Okay. So let's do like a 1 minute standing stretch break. And those of you who are not on the floor, if you're interested in trying to be on the floor, you could go and get a cushion and make space here if you want to experiment with it. And then we'll come back and we'll do another meditation for about the same length as before, maybe a little bit longer. So we'll do this next meditation, and some of it will sound exactly like what we did the first time. One of the characteristics of meditation is back practice is repetition. And we do the same, pretty much the same thing over and over again. And that's part of where the value comes from, is by doing a similar thing over and over again, you get to see and notice all the variations of what your mind and body does, all your different emotions and feelings. There's like a reference point that you can, helps you see more and more clearly what's going on for you. It's also so simple that because it's simple and repetitive, it's the place where you start developing a capacity to get focused. And now, meditation for most people, the focus, like on the breath or the sounds, is not like the most compelling thing you could think of paying attention to. Most of you have great capacity for concentration. But usually you're concentrating on things that you're really interested in. And one of the things many people are really interested in is their own thoughts. And there's no shortage of concentration ability, just that it's, you know, you're concentrating on what really grabs you. And the interest isn't always so skillful, or, you know, you're not always interested in the best things, you know, like your neurosis. You're really interested in that. But you have the ability. Or we could do something like, you know, you can read a book, you can watch television, you can even drive a car, and you have a certain degree of focus and attention. The advantage of meditation is that the breath, for example, is not inherently interesting. It's like fascinating. It's not going to get more wealthy by focusing on your breath or get more friends or, you know, things. It's just, you know, it's no obvious benefit. And so the advantage of that is that you're developing your capacity for concentration and focus without the help of your interest or fascination in something. And so you have to you're actually developing a natural capacity for concentration without the concentration being supported by or yoked by interest or fascination or fear or whatever it is that keeps you concentrated. Does that make some sense? So if you feel bored initially doing this, maybe just think that you're right on schedule. You know, this is what happens when it all begins. I've been following my breath now for almost 40 years. And I can tell you very honestly, it just gets more and more interesting. And now I'm fascinated by it. And the benefits and the value and the worlds it opens up to, the inner life, the emotional life, the spiritual life that comes with that focus on the breath is really a wonderful thing. If for you it seems kind of nothing at this point or hard to focus on, just consider you're right on schedule. This is what happens at the beginning. And one of the first things that meditators learn is patience. So be patient with how it is. So if it doesn't seem to go well, if you feel like you can't get focused, your mind is really scattered, you're ready to jump out and run out the door, it's okay. I mean, don't run out unless you have to, what's happening inside of you as you do this, it's all okay. It's just the beginning, it's the material that we're working with, it's how we're finding our way. It's best when you meditate to consider there are no mistakes. It's just what you're going to be present for and work with. Okay? So take a good meditation posture, best you can. And the best meditation postures are ones that allow for a combination of being alert and being relaxed. So an alert posture and a posture in which also you can feel somewhat relaxed, not tense in it. If you're really tense to begin with, then maybe emphasize the relaxed part of the posture. If you're too relaxed and tired, you might want to emphasize the alert part of the posture. There's a balance. And then gently close your eyes. And then to begin the practice, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. or if the breath doesn't work, just relax your ears and begin to receive the sounds that are around us. By taking some deep breaths and then relaxing as you exhale. The deep inhalations are a time to connect with your body and yourself, to connect yourself with yourself here and now. If there's a lot of momentum in your life to be concerned about other things and other places, to be caught up, then those deep breaths are a reminder to connect here to this body at this time. And the exhale is a good time to let go of whatever you can let go of. If you're holding any tension in your body, if there are thoughts or concerns that are easy to let go of, as you exhale, let them drift away. To help my 9-year-old son go to sleep, sometimes I'll do a guided meditation with him and I tell him, imagine that your thoughts drift away like soap bubbles. And then letting your breath return to normal. And there are meditation practices where people breathe in particular ways, yogic ways. In this practice that we do here, there's no special way of breathing, just a normal breath. We're cultivating meditation without any props of special breathing. And while you're breathing in a normal way, once again, scan through your body and see if there's any easy places that you can relax and soften. The face. Some people carry tension in their jaws. It can be nice to drop your mouth open and then float the teeth back together. Gently. As you exhale, it might be possible to soften the shoulders. People can soften in their chest, relax the heart, the chest. And it can be helpful to soften the belly. Let the belly hang forward. Some people will unbuckle their pants so there's more space for the belly to hang. Turning your attention to breathing. If you have trouble noticing your body as it breathes, you can either do the little thing of breathing a little deeper so you can feel it, get used to it, or you can put your hands on your belly, one hand on the belly. As you feel, put your hand on your belly, you might feel the movement. One of the reasons meditation like this can be relaxing is it shifts our focus of attention away from our stressful thoughts to the breathing. So whenever you notice yourself thinking, redirect your attention back to the breathing. Whenever you notice yourself thinking, see if you can let go of those thoughts and begin again feeling your breathing, feeling your body breathe. There's no need to judge how quickly your mind wanders off in thought. It's okay. Just whenever you're able to, come back again and experience breathing. And then see if you can gently stay there a number of breaths in a row. Maybe every out-breath, remembering to let go and relax. If there's anything that makes it difficult for you to meditate on the breath or on sounds, the practice is to simply notice what that is without judgment or reaction, without feeling that it's wrong. Just to notice. Noticing is using your attention to see what's here. And after you've noticed it clearly, perhaps then it's easier to begin again on your breathing. Noticing how your body experiences the process of breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. a gentle support for focusing on the breath is to very quietly in your mind have the thought in as you breathe in, out as you breathe out. Very softly, but just a little nudge or encouragement to stay there with the breath, to notice it, to be there. And then in the last few seconds here, experiment with trying to do this non-judgmental noticing of what's happening in you, in your body or your thoughts or your feelings. Whatever is happening for you inside, see if you can hold it or be aware of it in a very simple, ordinary way, as if it's okay for it to be there, just to feel it, know it, non-judgmental knowing. And then to end this sitting, you can take a couple of deep breaths, feeling your body as you breathe in. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Mindfulness, which is the heart of what we're teaching here, is using our ability to pay attention and in a very simple way to recognize what's happening in the present moment as it's happening. The simple recognition of what's happening as it's happening in our lives. So the breath is always happening, and so very simple, we're training ourselves, developing our capacity to notice what's happening as it's happening by being with the breath. If you're present for your breath, you're with what's happening, some aspect of what's happening. And so we're developing, and so we'll see over the next weeks that we'll expand the focus or the scope of mindfulness so we can do the same thing for other areas of our life. But it helps to when you open up to other areas of your life, it helps to have some stability. And the breath, part of the function of the breath is to calm down and stabilize the mind. Because if you, for example, in a couple of weeks when we focus on the emotions, if many people find it kind of challenging to be with emotions. They start thinking about it, they react to it, they're for and against it. But if you have the stability that mindfulness of breathing provides, then you're able to, it's easier to be present for emotions without being reactive and just see it in a clear way. And same thing with thinking. If I told you right now to focus on your thoughts, you'd probably spin out. But once your mind is a little bit calmer, it's easier to look at thoughts without being caught by them. So we start with creating stability, and so that's the beginning of the practice. So while you're doing this, there could be thoughts, there could be body sensations, there could be emotions that come in. Just know that we'll get to those later. For now, if it's possible, just try not to pay much attention to them. Just notice them in a non-reactive way if they're troublesome for you. And then just come back to your breath. Keep it really simple. Keep coming back to your breath. Keep coming back to your breath. This class, I think you probably will get the most out of this class if you practice what I teach in the class at home every day during the week. So if the homework, there's a sheet of paper. It's out there somewhere. There's a sheet of paper, which is kind of the homework or whatever you want to call it. It's a green sheet of paper. And it gives the basic instructions. And it gives some other things and some exercises you can do around breathing. It also gives you kind of some guideline for doing it at home, length of time and things like that. Most people find that it's easiest to do it in the morning when they more or less first get up. Some people need to have their coffee first. Some people like to take a shower first. Some people like to do it just right out of bed. But before the day starts, before you get caught up in everything. However, some people prefer to do it in the evening, coming back from work or before going to bed. The idea is to find a time that works for you where it's, you're more likely to be consistent. Because if it's possible the same time every day, it's a little bit easier for the body and mind to kind of get used to it and settle into that routine. And so you get more settled and calmer quicker. It's best to do it, turn off the phone, turn off the little beep that tells you you have an email. Just try to have as little disturbances around you as you can. If you live with someone, let them know to leave you alone, and it helps. And then drop in. Sometimes there's very powerful voices in the mind that tells you that you have to do something right now. So if you find the voice inside that says the freezer has to be defrosted now, you've been warned. And that this might happen, and you probably don't need to defrost the freezer at that minute. You can probably get through the meditation and then do it. But there are these, the mind makes all these very powerful urges sometimes to get away from it or to, things that seem really important. And the idea is to be really simple and stay present and just let that wash through you and notice it. So to practice a simple breath meditation or sound meditation, if you'd like. Next week, or usually the second week, I do a sound meditation, listening meditation for everyone. So, that's what I. Anything else I should say, Chin Kwan? Chin Kwan is the manager today. She also teaches this inter class sometimes, so she could be up here instead of me. But anything that I should.
You're not very awake.
And the man at the console also teaches this class. They teach together. Anything I should say that this first class that...
I think your teachings are complete.
So you can ask, certainly afterwards, if you want to ask them questions, you can ask them questions if you have any about any of this. So we have a few minutes. So any questions or comments about that meditation, anything you'd like to ask or about anything at this point? Chin Kwan will bring you the mic.
So with focusing on the breath, I also was aware that it felt like my tongue was filled with Novocaine. In my mouth.
Tongue was filled with what?
It felt like my tongue was like I had Novocaine from the dentist.
Oh, Novocaine. Oh, great.
This swelling in the tongue and the mouth.
Great.
But, so I'm focusing on, I'm just noticing that and the breath and because it's pretty strong.
Yeah. So what was I'd like to notice it and just let it be?
It was interesting and I thought I would ask you about it.
Great. I've never heard of that you know, the swollen tongue thing. But sometimes people start focusing on their, especially for the first time or early on, things that they haven't usually pay attention kind of get magnified. And so it could be simply that somehow it got magnified because you're not used to it, and you know, it's like somehow it got focused on there. So I would just take it as an interesting phenomenon. There's interesting things that can happen. And remember, the primary characteristics of mindfulness meditation is simply to notice non-reactively, non-judgmentally. Allow it to be there, just see it and be interested. There are other kinds of meditation. There's a kind of, in Buddhism we talked about, in contrast to mindfulness meditation, we talk about concentration meditation. And there, concentration meditation is only about getting focused, only about getting concentrated. And there, you wouldn't be interested in, or just, you wouldn't just spend time noticing what the tongue was like. You would just kind of forget that, and let's just go right back to the breath and stay there. But here with mindfulness, we're actually much more relaxed about what's going on. And if the tongue is happening, next week we'll talk about body sensations, so that's one. But I'd just take it as an interesting phenomenon and let it be. So I saw another hand. Yeah, please, yeah. And then we'll go you in the back. I see you in the back. You can be next. Yeah.
I had an itch, but I didn't know whether to scratch it or not, move or wait. So then I start thinking about whether to scratch it or not, or start counting down, you know, the minutes. So that's
great. So because this week is mostly just breath, you have two options that are primary options. One is to ignore it and just stay with your breath, and that might develop a lot of inner strength. That's one option. The other option is to scratch. Next week, I'll talk about mindfulness of the body, and which means mindfulness of sensations in the body, like an itch, for example, and you'll learn how we bring mindfulness to the itch. But that'll be next week.
I'll scratch away.
So for this week, you can just scratch.
All right, thank you.
So. Good question. So what's the difference between what we do here and TM, Transcendental Meditation, using a mantra? From the point of view of Buddhism, which might not characterize TM so accurately. I did TM first. It was the first meditation I did. But from the point of view of Buddhism, TM belongs to the concentration side of meditation. It's a concentration technique. Because you're focusing on a mantra and you're getting absorbed or focused on the mantra, and you're not really opening up the attention to notice the fullness of your life. So I've known people who've done a lot of mantra meditation. Part of it, it's very effective. It's a wonderful meditation practice. It's a good one to do. One of the nice things about mantra meditations like TM, it's possible to get a lot of bliss. That's nice, right? But what I've seen a lot of people come on retreats with me who have done a lot of mantra meditation and get into bliss, and they use it. They use the bliss as a way of shutting out much of their life. And so they don't actually know much about themselves. I tell them, you stop doing that. And start doing that. Just be with your breath and notice what's there. And they'll come back with their eyes open and say, I had no idea there was so much going on. I had all these thoughts and feelings and, you know, there's all this stuff. So here we're focusing on we do focus on the breath in the beginning, but we're going to learn how to have an attention, a mindfulness practice that can open up to the fullness of our life, to all the different aspects, so that all aspects of our life is included, and we start having a wise relationship to it, and we can learn from it. So nothing's excluded in this practice. And one of the very special things about this practice, and one of the things I like to think today, say that why it's sacred, what we do here, is that there's no outside. Everything's included. And so you'll probably, if you do this for a while, you get a sense of how wonderful that is, that you have a practice of attention, of mindfulness and stability, where there's no, everything can be included within it. But now, last question. Oh, same question, how nice. So pick up the sheet if you'd like, and And I'll stay around if you want to ask me questions. You certainly can ask Shin Kwan or Jim questions. Also Diana, who's sitting here as a name tag. She's been knows a lot about this and been around for a long time. And I'm happy to answer any questions. So, thank you.